from the Christian Classics Ethereal Library on the web at www.ccel.org. William Law, born in 1686 in Northamptonshire, entered Emmanuel College, Cambridge in 1705, declined to take oath of allegiance on accession of George I, entered family of Edward Gibbon as tutor in 1727, died 1761. William Law, a serious call to a devout and holy life. Introduction by Reverend Norman Sykes, Dixie Professor of Ecclesiastical History in the University of Cambridge. Introduction. In our family, wrote Edward Gibbon of William Law, he had left the reputation of a worthy and pious man who believed all that he professed and practiced all that he enjoined. The character of a non-juror, which he maintained to the last, is a sufficient evidence of his principles in church and state, and the sacrifice of interest to conscience will be always respectable. Mr. Law's masterwork, The Serious Call, is still read as a popular and powerful book of devotion. His precepts are rigid, but they are founded on the gospel. His satire is sharp, but it is drawn from the knowledge of human life, and many of his portraits are not unworthy of the pen of La Bruyere. If he finds a spark of piety in the reader's mind, he will soon kindle it to a flame, and a philosopher must allow that he exposes, with equal severity and truth, the strange contradiction between the faith and practice of the Christian world. This tribute from the author of The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire is sufficiently striking in itself, and it is confirmed by the verdict of another historian, Leakey, who's designated Law as a very remarkable man and a singularly skillful and brilliant controversialist, and who wrote of A Serious Call that it is indeed one of the most solemn and most powerful works of its kind in any literature, and is well fitted to exercise a deep and lasting influence upon the character. It is fitting, however, to sketch the biography of the author before saying something of the nature of his writings. William Law, son of Thomas Law, a grocer, and Margaret, his wife, was born at King's Cliff, near Stamford, Northamptonshire, in 1686, the fourth of eight sons in a family of 11. He matriculated at Emmanuel College, Cambridge, in 1705 as a Sizar, and in that Puritan foundation of Sir Walter Mildmay, in the reign of Elizabeth I, the piety already implanted in him by his domestic surroundings was nurtured and fostered. After graduating B.A. in 1708, he took holy orders in 1711 and was elected a fellow of his college. But having espoused the fashionable Toryism of the reign of Queen Anne, he was suspended from his degrees in 1713 for suspected Jacobite tendencies. On the accession of George I, he refused to take the oaths of allegiance to the House of Hanover and abjuration of the pretender, and was deprived of his fellowship. Henceforth he lived in retirement from public life. Though one of the most eminent of the non-jurors and the ablest controversialists in behalf of their cause, he entered the family of Edward Gibbon, grandfather of the historian, at Putney, and in 1727 accompanied his pupil, Edward Gibbon, Jr., father of the historian, to Cambridge, where he matriculated at Law's old college. Law continued as the much-honored friend and spiritual director of the Gibbon family, but retired to King's Cliff in 1740, where he lived until his death in 1761, maintaining his close relations with Miss Hester Gibbon, to whom he bequeathed all his property, and who, with Mrs. Archibald Hutchison, joined him at King's Cliff in 1744. In his native village, Law was a notable benefactor, founding there a school for 14 girls in 1727. And when, in 1745, Mrs. Hutchison founded a school for 18 boys and some almshouses, he added other almshouses and a school building. In addition, he was promiscuous in private charity, having an especial compassion for beggars, giving daily milk and soup for the poor, and being a lover of animals. In his private life, he was strict and ascetic to the point of austerity, rising each day at 5 o'clock for several hours' devotion before the family prayers at 9, and spending the greater part of his time in his study, a small room of about 14 feet square, furnished principally with a table, chair, the Bible, and a library of theological and mystical writings. Despite his retiring disposition and his non-juring sympathies, which cut him off from the political and ecclesiastical life of his age, he was a prolific controversialist and writer. In 1716, Benjamin Hodey, Bishop of Bangor, the object of Whig idolatry and Tory abhorrence, published his famous sermon on the nature of the kingdom or Church of Christ, in which he dissolved the church into a voluntary society by denying all corporate authority to it alike in faith and morals. To this, Law, already known as a high churchman, replied by 3 letters to the Bishop of Bangor, in which, with mordant irony, he demolished the bishop's contentions and set forth his own defense of the apostolic succession and of the powers of the church. 20 years later, in 1737, he returned to the attack in his demonstration of the gross and fundamental errors of Hodey's tract on the Lord's Supper, in which he stated the argument for belief in the real presence against the bishop's denial. In 1723, he published his remarks upon a late book entitled The Fable of the Bees, in which he rebutted Mandeville's obliteration of the distinction between virtue and vice, save as a convention of society. 3 years later, he argued for the absolute unlawfulness of stage entertainments, following the line of attack of another non-juror, Jeremy Collier, with all the exaggeration and vehemence characteristic of the theme and the age. He wrote also against the deism of Matthew Tyndall's Christianity as Old as the Creation, and against Bishop Warburton's The Divine Legation of Moses. He was therefore an omnivorous controversialist, though his fame rests upon his 2 chief devotional works, Christian Perfection and A Serious Call. It was through the publication of these books that he became known to John Wesley, who for a time was much influenced by Law, though later he parted from him somewhat ungraciously and acrimoniously. During his latter years, Law's high churchmanship was modified by his studies in mysticism, particularly in the works of Jacob Bohm, and it was upon the ground of his mystical doctrines that John Wesley found him an uncertain guide. Today, however, Law is remembered chiefly, if not exclusively, for A Serious Call to a Devout and Holy Life, first published in 1728. Its contemporary influence was far-reaching. Dr. Samuel Johnson recorded how, when at Oxford, I took up Law's Serious Call to a Holy Life, expecting to find it a dull book, as such books generally are, and perhaps to laugh at it. But I found Law quite an overmatch for me. Later he described it as the finest piece of hortatory theology in any language. John Wesley found, after reading this work and Law's Christian Perfection, that the light flowed so mightily upon my soul that everything appeared in a new view, and his companion in evangelism, George Whitefield, likewise confessed that God worked powerfully upon my soul. By that and his other excellent treatise upon Christian perfection. Even an agnostic Victorian writer, Leslie Stephen, avowed that Law may be read with pleasure even by the purely literary critic. Perhaps, indeed, there is a touch of profanity in reading in cold blood a book which throughout palpitates with the deepest emotions of its author, and which has thrilled so many sympathetic spirits. The power can only be adequately felt by readers who can study it on their knees. When a man is forced by an overmastering impulse to lay bare his inmost soul, the recipient of the confession should be in harmony with the writer. Furthermore, from the standpoint purely of a literary critic, Stephen is constrained to admit that, little as Law resembles the contemporary essayists and schools, his portraits remind us that he was, in fact, a contemporary of Addison, Steele, and Swift. Miranda and Flavia and Lucius and Mundanus might, with a little expansion, have made admirable papers in The Spectator. But it is as a religious classic, not as a literary tour de force, that the serious call has earned and retained its fame. It is its own best interpreter. Written to rebuke a profligate, irreligious, and heterodox generation, for Law's epic saw a powerful, Arianizing movement in England, its dominant theme was to sound the call to a life of piety and devotion in the midst of a gainsaying world. In it, Law sketches typical figures of his times. Flavia, the very orthodox churchwoman, who despite her riches thinks it's generous to give a crown to charity, and would be a miracle of piety if she was but half as careful of her soul as she is of her body. Her sister Miranda, the true pattern of piety, devotion, and charity, who has renounced the world to follow Christ in the exercise of humility, charity, devotion, abstinence, and heavenly affections. Flatus, restless, always uneasy, and always searching after happiness, volatile, yet never finding peace, and content of mind. Feliciana, a woman of the world, seeking its transient pleasures, and therefore always deaf to the reasonings of religion. Succus, whose greatest happiness is a good night's rest in bed and a good meal when he is up, and who praises that minister the most who keeps the best table. Cognatus, the sober, regular clergyman of good repute in the world and well esteemed in his parish, orthodox but chiefly concerned with marketing his corn and becoming rich in order to endow his niece, or Negotius, a temperate, honest man, engaged in trade, a benefactor, who has given a fine ring of bells to a church in the country, but who has no thoughts save for the success of his business. These and sundry other characters are depicted by Law in order, by contrast, to draw his readers to a life of religion and piety. The only advice which can be given in respect of Law's serious call is that the voice which exhorted Augustine in the garden, "Toll, Leggy, take and read," for it is its own best commentator and interpreter. Norman Sykes, 1955. Editor's Note: Law's serious call to a devout and holy life was first published in 1728, when he had been resident tutor for a time in the house at Putney of Edward Gibbon. He accompanied his pupil, a son of the same name, who became father to the great historian, to Cambridge in 1727, and when his son went abroad, he returned to the Gibbon household. According to Gibbon's autobiography, Law drew the portraits of Flavia and Miranda in the devout life from the two daughters of the house, Catherine and Hester. But, as Leslie Stephen pointed out, He would hardly have done this while himself still a member and spiritual advisor of the family. Moreover, he had ample opportunities of meeting the Flavias and Mirandas of his day. On accompanying young Edward Gibbon to Cambridge, Law was already well acquainted with the university, for he had graduated there, and became fellow of Emmanuel College in 1711. Law's three letters to the Bishop of Bangor in 1717 were the first distinct sign he afforded of his intellectual quality and his unique powers as an independent religious thinker. In 1726 appeared his absolute unlawfulness of the stage entertainment, also his practical treatise on Christian perfection, which confessedly influenced John and Charles Wesley, both of whom afterwards visited him at Putney. But they were temperamentally out of sympathy with his mysticism, and they parted company with him definitely as time went on. It was in 1740 that Law settled at King's Cliff, where, with the aid of Mrs. Hutchinson, a widow of a disciple and friend, and Miss Hester Gibbon, he proceeded to carry out in downright everyday practice the ideas of a serious life. Here the rules were homely, hospitable, austere, and simple, and charity to the poor, practices of extreme generosity, kindness to animals, and attention to the smaller virtues proved the absolute reality of Law's own call. The life at King's Cliff was not unlike that of the household at Little Giddings described in John Inglesant. Law latterly had come much under the influence of Jacob Bohme, but the mystics had profoundly appealed to him from the first. His Way to Divine Knowledge, which was by way of preamble to a new English edition of the works of Bohme, appeared in 1752. We must not forget Dr. Johnson's tribute to the serious call, that it was the first occasion of his thinking in earnest of religion after he became capable of rational inquiry. William Law was born in 1686 and died in 1761 at King's Cliff. The following is the complete table of his published works. Selected Bibliography. Letters to Bishop of Bangor, 1717-19. Fable of the Bees, 1724. Unlawfulness of Stage Entertainment, 1726. On Christian Perfection, 1726. A Serious Call to a Devout and Holy Life, 1728. The Case of Reason or Natural Religion, 1731. On the Lord's Supper, 1737. Answer to Dr. Trapp's Discourse, 1740. The Spirit of Prayer, 1749. Christian Regeneration, 1750. Where Shall I Go to Be in the Truth? Letter to a Friend, 1750. The Way to Divine Knowledge, 1752. The Spirit of Love, 1752. Confutation of Warburton's Defense of Christianity, 1757. Of Justification by Faith and Works, 1760. Letters on Important Subjects and on Several Occasions, 1760. Address to the Clergy, 1761. Letters to a Lady Inclined to Enter the Church of Rome, 1731 and 2, 1779. Collected Works, 9 volumes, 1762. Biography and Criticism. Sir L. Stephen, English Literature and Society in the 18th Century, 1904. Caroline Spurgeon, William Law, 1912. S. H. Gem, The Mysticism of William Law, 1914. S. H. Hobhouse, William Law and the 18th Century Quakerism, 1927. S. H. Hobhouse, Fides et Ratio, 1936. J.B. Green, John Wesley and William Law, 1948. E.W. Baker, A Herald of the Evangelical Revival, 1948. Muriel Granger, William Law and the Life of the Spirit, 1948. A.W. Hopkinson, About William Law, 1948. The notes in this book simply aim at explaining the